All right. Good evening, everybody. I hope everyone had a wonderful Purim last week. Someone asked me the other day and said, how is my Purim? I said, what I remembered was excellent. So, but I hope everybody is doing well. And I'm excited. Tonight's class is really, I like this one. I like a lot of them, but this one is very meaningful to me. Let's just recap where we are. We started doing the Shema as part of our going through the service. And I took the quick doodle poll yet last time, and you guys were like, keep going with Shema. Let's keep going. So we obviously spent time on the first verse about Shema Yisrael. We talked about what it means to love Hashem with all of our heart, with all our soul, with all of our might, resources, abilities. That's what we're up to. The next verse of the Shema in that first paragraph says, V'hayu hadvarim ha'ela. And these words, Asher anochi mitzavacha hayom, that I command you today, al levavecha, they should be upon your heart. Simply understood that Hashem is telling us, hey, this is critical. These are very important ideas, very important principles that need to be taken seriously. Do not regard these divine commandments as old, obsolete, stale, outdated dogma, but rather as if they were given today. It's very, if you think about it, let's look at this verse very carefully. V'hayu hadvarim ha'ela, and it shall be these words, asher anochi mitzavacha, that I command you, hayom, today. Pause. What do you mean that Hashem commands us today? I didn't get any emails about God giving us these commandments today on March the 23rd of 2022. These commandments were commanded to us 3,300 plus years ago. What do you mean? And these words that I command you today, I wasn't commanded on it today. And even when this was written, it was not that day. It was much later. So why do we repeat this phrase that these words that I command you today? So the first explanation I'm alluding to here is that the way we need to approach our perspective, our connection with our Judaism, is that it needs to be fresh, as if it was just given today. Obviously, historically, it was given thousands of years ago, but we need to feel that it was reaching me today, something brand new. You know, I love giving my grandchildren. I used to love giving my children, but it's much more pleasurable to give my grandchildren these presents now. And it's so, you know, it's so classic of where the excitement on their face of getting this new toy or a game or article of clothing. And it's just so exciting. But by the third week, they're on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And that which you spent the money on, which is appreciated, has been relegated to somewhere in the closet. And then usually two or three Passovers later, as you're cleaning, you're like, no, I think it's time to donate it to Goodwill because it's not being used anymore. We lose our excitement. It's human nature. It's not just little kids. We as adults, we're always looking for the new thrill, the new exciting, the most recent, you know, iPhone 11. Please, Rabbi, that is so yesterday. If you don't have 13, you are just living in the dark ages. There's nothing you can do with an iPhone 11, Rabbi, seriously. That's what it feels like. Says the Shema, these words that I command you should be in your mind as if it's fresh, as if it was given today. I'll give you another example. There's a beautiful Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, in Ethics of the Fathers, where it talks about our relationship with our mentors, with our rabbis and our teachers. And it says that the words that they teach, it says, you shall drink in their words thirstily. You shall drink in their words thirstily. It's a very funny word. And it's not just a quirk in English. In Hebrew, heveshoseh batzama, you shall drink it with thirst. It's a funny expression, but it's along the same lines. And that is, you need an attitude, like we say in English, there's a thirst for knowledge. You're thirsty, you're parched. If I don't get another boost of knowledge, I feel like I'm wanting. If you're full, think about it. If you've had a fantastic meal and you're full, way above satiation, you're really full, and they bring out your favorite dessert. Okay, guys like me will manage somehow to loosen the belt buckle and manage somehow with tremendous, tremendous strength, inner strength, to pull through and eat the dessert. But the normal people out there, it's not sweet, because you've already reached the point of where you're so full, you can't get one more morsel in. That's how we need to approach it. You can't say, you know, I'll tell you one more story. I'm looking around the group here, right? I, for many, many years, and some of you have heard me say this, for many years, I did not feel comfortable teaching to an observant crowd. If everybody in the crowd was, you know, yeshiva background, and they're observant and Shabbos and kosher, I didn't feel like I had what to share with them, because we're in the same boat. And what, you know, they know the beauty of tzitzis. They know the beauty of tefillin. They know the beauty of mezuzah. They know the beauty of Shabbos. They know the beauty of kosher. I mean, they know. What am I going to tell them? For those who don't have that background, for those who were not privileged to have that lifestyle and that upbringing, good. So that's why I'm here, to teach it. But what am I going to teach them? And folks, I was wrong. I was very wrong. Not because necessarily they didn't know it, but just the opposite. It has become so been there, done that attitude. You're going to, you know, tefillin. Thank God, other than a few rare occasions, which sadly I admit, I have put on tefillin every possible day since my bar mitzvah. That's a lot of days. But imagine the boy, when he gets ready to put on his tefillin, he's so excited, and he's meticulous and makes sure that it's exactly where it's supposed to be. And as he wraps it, and there's a certain excitement, a youthfulness, a zest for it. And then you get to be doing it for a number of years, and it becomes, you know, how late can I come to shul that I can still get it on in time, not to miss the first? You lose it. And my sharing the excitement to those who may not have learned about the excitement is no different than trying to infuse that same excitement to those of us who've done it for so long, because it's human nature that you build up that apathy. You build up that been there, done that. We need to have that thirst for knowledge. The Medrash gives a beautiful analogy. It's just, again, it's a phenomenon in our world. We know that fish live in water. Yet it's a crazy phenomenon that scientists have wondered about. And that is, when it rains, fish have a tendency to work their way to the top and sometimes even jump out of the water to catch a raindrop. And you ask yourself, like, you're surrounded by water. One more drop? Like, what don't you get, fish? No, the answer is, what don't you get, human being? I got it right. It's a fresh new drop. It's an excitement. Go grab another one. Yeah, I'm surrounded by. I learned the Shema. I say the Shema. But here's a new, fresh insight I never heard before. I get invigorated. It's great. I'm going to focus a little bit better the next time I say it. We all need that. And that's why it says that these words that I command you, parentheses, 3,300 years ago, end parenthesis, should be as fresh as if it were given today. That's the first step. And if you think about it, there's so much about Judaism that tries to impress this upon us. It says, my internet is unstable. Does that mean I'm getting frozen? Am I frozen? Yes? Frozen?
No.
No? Okay, good. Okay. What? Here, I'll give you an example. Who can tell me the very first commandment that we were given as a nation? Very first commandment we were given as a people, as a nation.
Calendar.
Yes. It was Rosh Chodesh.
New moon.
The new month. We hadn't even left Egypt yet. If you want to check it out, it's Exodus chapter 12, right in the beginning there. Okay? It's the first mitzvah we were given as a nation. And the way the Torah phrases it, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, this month, meaning the month of Nisan, that's the Hebrew month that we are soon to enter, God willing, next week, right? The month in which Passover falls, the Exodus. This month, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem Rosh Chadashim, this month shall be for you the first of the months. When we count, you know, numerically, the first month of the year, second month of the year, we don't start with Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah. I know Liz has this unbelievable, perplexed look. It shouldn't come as a shock. We have, even on our calendars, what we use as the calendar year goes from January through December. But there's an academic year. The academic year goes from September till July, June, whatever. You have a tax year, a fiscal year. It could be different. We have all different years. Judaism does the same. The years, when we talk about a calendar year, changing from 5782 to 5783, that happens on Rosh Hashanah, in Tishrei. But if you're talking about the first month, second month, third month of the year, it starts in Nisan. That's why it says, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, this month shall be for you the first of the months. But the Talmud is bothered. Just why is it called this? Just say, now should be, count from the Exodus. HaChodesh, says the Talmud, comes from the word Chidush. Chidush means new and novel, fresh. This concept of a constant renewal is the symbol of the moon. Right? The sun is a constant. It never changes. Yes, it rises and sets, but as far as its functionality, doesn't make a difference what day of the year, it's the same sun. The moon is constantly, there's no 2 days in a row where the moon is the same. Every single day, it's in a process of waxing and waning. That's what it does. The Jewish people are compared to the moon. That's the reason why we use the lunar calendar as the basis of what we do. We are like the moon, of where it's a constant, an attempt in terms of a constant renewal, a revival. Even when we go down and we hit some pitfalls, we learn that we can grow. We can grow and get higher and ascend. This is the whole idea of constant thirst, constantly rejuvenating. And that's spelled R-E-J-E-W, rejuvenating. Sorry. Okay. So this is the first lesson that the Shema is impressing upon us, that we need to have that freshness, hayom, as if it was given today. The question is, yes, Liz.
This was the first commandment?
As a people.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
You're thinking the Ten Commandments. I'm all choked up. The Ten Commandments is true, except prior. Prior to leaving the Exodus, we were told about Rosh Chodesh because we needed to know in terms of taking the Paschal lamb that was soon to be brought. So at the beginning of that story is where God says, I want you to, from this moment on, count Nisan as the first of your months. That's the very first command. Okay. We'll put it on our docket of things to talk about why that is. Why is that so significant? But we'll put that for another time. But here's what I want you to ask yourself. How do I do that? How do I go ahead and I buck human nature? Because we all get tired of things. We get bored. It becomes old and stale. That's the nature of the world in which we live. How do we do it? The answer is very simple, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll give you the expression. It's the phrase that pays. Mark it, make a note of it. Hard by the yard, cinch by the inch. You like that? Alan's smiling. Hard by the yard, cinch by the inch. The only way that we are able to constantly rejuvenate and have that thirst for more is where you don't try to swallow it all at one time. You have to do it step by step. A little today, a little tomorrow. Yeah, you should remain a little bit thirsty. That is the goal. Don't fill yourself up completely, right? My mother, God bless her, she's an avid reader her whole life, right? She would go ahead and start a book and she cannot put it down until she finishes it. But Ma, you gonna remember what happened in chapter 3? Yeah. I was like, I can't remember what happened in chapter 3 if I read 5 chapters. It's like, I'm on overload. I can't do it. Hard by the yard, cinch by the inch. That's what we have to be cognizant of. But here's what's also interesting. It from a grammatical standpoint, and these words, going back to the verse, these words that I command you today should be upon your heart. If you put the comma in the wrong place, folks, you're in deep gahak tzaris, as they say in Yiddish. Yeah, no translation necessary. If you put the comma, right, if you don't pause between the word today and on your heart, it'll come out that let these words be upon your heart today, implying today it should be on my heart, but tomorrow I don't have to worry about it. No, 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 no. That's not how this works. It's these words that I command you today, comma, should be upon your heart. Not today upon your heart. I really shouldn't say this, but we get it wrong at Shoresh. The way we sing our song for Shema, we do this incorrectly. My singing, you know, is not great, but V'hayu ha'divarim ha'ele asher anochi mitzavecha hayom. That part's right. But the beginning, V'hayu ha'divarim, and it shall be the things, comma, ha'ele asher anochi. And these words, comma, V'hayu ha'divarim ha'ele. Comma is really, really should be. Not that I'm going to change the song, folks, but if you want to sing it correctly, it's Vehayu Hadevarim Ha'ele. Pause. Asher Anochi Mitzah. And then you go on from there. But I'll get off my soapbox 1 second. Okay, I'm better. Okay. So this is the first thing. We need to be aware that we need to have that livelihood, that excitement, that sense of vitality. Okay. But here's what bothers me more. Where should I be placing these words? What does the verse say? V'hayu hadvarim ha'ele, and it shall be these words that I command you today, comma, where should they be? Al levavecha, upon your heart. Can someone give me a suggestion of a better phrase where you should put them?
Say in your heart.
In your heart, not on your heart. Put it in your heart, internalize it. on your heart. I think I shared this with you before, right? I had a teacher once who was really, he was ripping on a whole group of people. And he said, you know, there are a lot of Jews who say that they're Jews at heart. You ever hear that? Jews at heart. He says, yeah, that's why there's Jews have so many heart attacks. Don't put your Judaism on your heart. It goes in your heart. I said, okay, fine. But he's right in the sense of begging the question. Why would the verse say you should place them on your heart? In your heart makes much more sense. So there's a few answers that I'd like to propose that I've read. Number one is that Rav Hirsch writes that the words themselves should not only reach the mind, right, of the ones who hear it, right, which is an intellectual pursuit, but rather it should have a certain weight. It should exert a certain influence internally, be taken to heart. It's an expression we use even in English, right? Take what I'm teaching you, take it to heart. First thing, it's not just intellectual pursuits that, you know, I hear the point, Rabbi, but it never translates to anything because it's not internalized. So that's the first message. But on a deeper level, we have to learn patience. Similar to the idea I said earlier about hard by the yard, cinch by the inch, we have to be patient with ourselves. I know we're accustomed to thinking that the rabbis are there to push us harder and harder. There are life, our coaches that really want us to keep going and don't be satisfied. That's true. However, the smart rabbis will also understand that we're human beings, that we have to be careful, and the only way to do it is to be patient. You cannot expect it to bring about real change in life in a dramatic way overnight. It doesn't have staying power. It just doesn't. We need to have patience with our students, with our children, and most importantly, with ourselves. There are many times in our lives of where we don't understand or we don't appreciate. We may not even at that moment agree with it. It strikes us as strange, the Torah perspective on X, Y, or Z. You know what you should do with it? File it away. Put it in a folder in your brain. Keep it there. At some point, something may happen. It could be a week. It could be a month, it could be years later. Something is said or something you heard, something you learned, some experience that happened to you. And all of a sudden in your head, there's a little click and you're like, oh, now I understand that. I've always wondered about that. And that file that had been sitting there waiting is now open again. And you're like, now I get it. The Torah here is teaching us such a profound lesson. There are times of where I don't understand. I don't comprehend. As much as the rabbi did a great job explaining it, it doesn't sit well with me. Don't get rid of it. File it away. You know where you should put it? Al levavecha. Just put it on your heart. You're not ready to put it in your heart yet because you don't understand, you don't appreciate, or you don't even agree with it at that moment. Don't throw it away. Don't dismiss it. File it. Put it on your heart. Why? Because eventually, at some point, when you're ready to comprehend, perhaps ready to accept it because of some propitious moment of inspiration, it will open up. And you know what? When the heart opens, all those files that had been sitting on the heart, when it opens, all of that will now very nicely go into your heart. The Torah here is teaching us such a great lesson. Don't despair because you don't get it. Don't despair because it's not the way you've always understood it. And therefore quit and say, no, not for me. No. You can say, I'm not there yet, or I don't understand, but I'm going to make a note of it. Maybe one day I will, maybe I won't. I don't know, but I'm not going to dismiss it categorically. You can even put these words that I command you today, you can even put it on your heart. Not everything is going to go in the heart so quickly. You with me? Let's keep going then. Next verse. Teach them thoroughly to your children and speak of them while you sit in your home, while you walk on the way, when you retire and when you arise. Just to clarify, when you retire has nothing to do with age 65. This is nothing to do with what we all are, you know. No. It means when you lay down to go to sleep at night, when you retire for the day. Yes, even me, who has not officially reached that glorious age, right? I retire at some point. It's not usually at night. It's usually AM, but it's still dark outside, and we call that retiring for the day, all right, for the night. Okay. You shall teach them thoroughly to your children. I can't even begin to tell you how much I want to talk about this topic. It is one of the most critical aspects of our lives. Making sure that these words that were commanded to us, as we just said in the previous verse, these words shall be taken seriously, taken to heart. What should you do with it? Well, if we had stopped at the previous verse, at the end of it, we would have said, I need to take it and internalize it. I need to learn it. I need to incorporate it. This is all about what I do with it. Comes along this verse and says, that's not the whole story. There's another aspect. All that you learn, all that you've gained and appreciate, make sure you teach it thoroughly to the next generation. I would have to share this fascinating midrash. It's one of my favorites. We all know the end of the story. The end of the story is that the Jewish people stood at Mount Sinai and God gave us the Torah. We all know the end of the story. But do we know the rest of the story? Well, let's see what Paul Harvey has to say. Listen to this. The story goes like that. I know you're impressed. I knew that, right?
I'm impressed.
Thank you. Okay. The Midrash reads as follows, and I'll explain, but it's pretty straightforward. When the Jewish people stood at Mount Sinai to receive the Torah, God said to them, I swear that I will give you the Torah. Just bring me good guarantors that will guarantee its survival, and I will give it to you. This is no different than when you go take out a mortgage from the bank. You need some kind of cosigner. You need some kind of guarantor, right? They're not just going to give you a loan, and especially if you're asking for a lot of money. They want to know who's going to co-sign for this thing in case, God forbid, you default. God, who's giving us his most prized possession, says, I'll give it to you. You have my word, but I want a guarantor. I want someone who's going to make sure that it gets, you know, the survival. So the Jewish people first responded and said, Master of the universe, let our ancestors act as guarantors for us. We have seven amazing patriarchs and matriarchs. Let them be the guarantors. God says, that's good, but not good enough. The Jewish people continue and they say, let all the prophets over the many generations, let them be the guarantors. Nope, God says, that's also very good, but no. Until finally, the Jewish people stood there and said, our children will be our guarantors. God immediately responds and says, they are certainly fine guarantors. Because of them will I give you the Torah. It is such an amazing insight. We are incorrect in our thought process. We think that we are the possessors of Judaism. We are the ones who have experience, knowledge, whatever it is. And yes, I have a responsibility to make sure to give it over to the next generation. But it is mine and I give it over to you. No, says the Midrash, you have it backwards. You only have the right to it because you promised to give it to the children. They are the reason why you have it in the first place. If you're not going to give it to them, you don't deserve it. You don't have a right to it. Part and parcel of our knowledge of Judaism is making sure that it is given to the next generation. They are the guarantors of us getting the Torah. It's our responsibility to make sure that it gets passed down. I'll go further. Someone please tell me, in your own words, why did God choose Abraham to be the father of our nation? Why? Give it to me, and you can give it to me in a sentence, two sentences. Give me what's the reason why Abraham is chosen to be our first patriarch, the founder of the Jewish nation. Why?
He will teach his children.
Go ahead. So you know the verse. You know the verse. But Monroe notwithstanding, how many of you would have given that answer? I don't think most of us. I think most of us.
I didn't hear the answer. I'm sorry. What did he say?
Oh, good. You didn't hear it. Great. I think most of us would say something to the effect of, well, his level of hospitality, his ability to teach the world about this concept of monotheism. We would list probably four or five major, major contributions that Avraham provided to our world. But the Torah doesn't say that. Monroe is citing the verse that says very simply, God said, "Shall I conceal from Abraham what I do? Now that Abraham is surely to become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall bless themselves by him. For I have loved him." Why? Because he commands his children and his household after him that they keep the way of God. It's because Abraham made it his number one priority to make sure that there is a next generation that will walk with the value system God had taught him. That's the number one reason. He was chosen to be our father of our nation, having that relationship with God, because he made sure that the next generation got it. The Hebrew words that are taken from that verse, Asher Yitzaveh et Banav, that he will command his children, is hinted. The last letter of each word, Asher, has a resh, Yitzaveh is a hey, S is Tav, Banav is a Vav, are the letters Torah. How cool is that? Asher Yitzaveh es Banav, that he commands his children. There's an allusion in those four words to what it is. Yeah, it's the lessons of Torah. The foundations of who we are as a people. That's what he committed himself to. And that's why he was loved and given that tremendous, tremendous privilege. Almost every single divine commandment given by God to the Jewish people has the word lemar. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemar. And God spoke to Moses, everybody translated as saying. Duh. What do you mean? What should he have done? And God spoke to Moses. Yeah, what do you want him to do with it? Saying? Well, I always thought that meant, okay, the next sentence is going to tell me, quote, what it is God said. God spoke to Moses saying, each Jew shall take a paschal lamb and blah, 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 whatever it is, right? You don't need the word lamar. You don't need the word saying. God commanded Moses, take for yourself and get to the punchline. What's this word lamar saying? Am I being clear on this question? Like it's from the Department of Redundancy Department. It's totally unnecessary and superfluous at the same time. Come on, folks, wake up, right? And God commanded Moses, Then tell me the command. What's this word that is always found at the end of that sentence? Saying. So our sages teach us the word lamar isn't now telling us to put quotes, saying, quote, what's going to follow, but rather it means, and God spoke to Moses to tell it over to the Jewish people, meaning say it. I want you to teach it. I want it to be not just we're quoting the narrative and God spoke to Moses by saying the following. No, it's more than that. Every command is preceded with the word, tell it over to others. There is no point in a divine command if it's just to you and me. The divine command is for us and the next group and the group after and the group after. It constantly needs to be said over. Folks, in approximately 3 weeks, shudder, 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 we're going to be celebrating Pesach. We're going to be celebrating Passover. And we're going to sit around the Seder, God willing. And we're going to read from a book. And the book is called the Haggadah. What does the word Haggadah mean? Sandy got it. Tell it over. It means to recount the story. That's the name of the book. Tell it over. Focus. This is all about making sure that these traditions are taught thoroughly to the next generation. And we start when the kids are as young as possible. The Talmud tells a story about a great sage who became the great sage. The Talmud says, why? Because his mother took his bassinet, his little porta crib, his pack and play, and she put it right by the study hall where the sages were learning Torah. From his earliest age, his ears took in. Did he understand the conversation? No, of course not. But words of Torah began to penetrate his eardrum from his earliest age. Yes, don't wait for the bar and bar mitzvah to start giving it over. You're already 12 and 13 years behind schedule. There are studies that talk about playing music to the child in utero. You ever hear about this? Yeah. So I ask you folks, we're all shaking our heads. Yeah, we've heard this. There's probably truth. If it works for classical music, don't you think God's words can do it too? Of course it can. This is the power that we need to understand of what we're playing with there. Making sure that our children and our grandchildren and future descendants understand, appreciate, and have that feeling of connection. Tell you one more insight about this concept. I'm telling you, I can go on for hours about this one. It's a good thing we have to move on. There's two kinds of educators in the world. And I don't mean good and bad. I mean the mode by which we educate. One is in a formal way, meaning a teacher. Teacher gets up, whether it's formal education in a classroom or even informal like we're doing, but it's in an education modality. It's teacher. In Hebrew, a teacher is called a mechanech, someone who provides education. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky of blessed memory, he passed away in 1982, I think. Great, great American rabbi here. He made the following point. He said, parents are also educators, aren't we? But they're not called mechanchim. They're not called educators. In his word, they're called mashpiim. Mashpiim means influencers. Influencers. And he wanted to make a distinction between educators and influencers. Not just because educators are in a direct manner. I have information and I'm disseminating it to my students. Parents, they influence indirectly. How do they do it indirectly? Oh, brilliant. The word mashpia, which is the Hebrew word for influencer, comes from the word shipua. Shipua means an incline, something on an angle. Classic example is the way many of our roofs in Frederick, right? It's on an incline so that it goes from the roof to the crick. Sorry. The whole reason why it's on an incline is because even if it lands all the way at the top, it will automatically slide down the incline into the gutter and then go out. Right? He says, parents, yes, there are moments where there are teaching moments of parents, but the vast, vast, vast majority of how parents influence their children is called trickle-down parenting. The way I do it sends a message. The way I control myself, the way I push myself, the way I conduct my language, the way I dress, the way I fill in the blank. I may not say the words, but I am influencing my children because I am indirectly doing it. Slanted roof. Everything we say or do, don't say or do, flows to the children and leaves a lasting impression. Rabbi Friend, one of the great teachers here at Ner Israel, has a great story. He was drawing, he was giving a lecture, and he was talking about this concept of being consistent in our behaviors. And he used this in terms of parenting. And he talks about a kid who, after the umpteenth number time that he lied, the parent is just absolutely livid and gives a whole lecture about not to lie, the importance of being honest and speaking the truth. And even if sometimes that gets you in trouble, but it's the right thing. And he's really, really banging home this whole lecture about lying. And towards the end of it, the phone, you can hear it in the background, the phone rings. And one of the other kids picks up. And he says, hold on one second. And the father is listening, you know. So the kid who picked up the phone said, hey, Dad, you have a phone call. Who is it? It's Mr. Jones. Tell him I'm not home. Yeah. How did that lecture on lying just work? How'd that work for you, buddy? Yeah, right out the window. But we do it, unfortunately, way too often. We do it too often. We have to understand that we as, and again, I use the word parents, it could be grandparents, it doesn't matter. Anything that's in a role model kind of situation, not in a formal teacher, is an influencer by how we conduct ourselves. That's how we transmit it to our children. That's perhaps the reason why it says, you shall teach them in our verse. You shall teach them thoroughly to your children. Teach these words thoroughly to your children. And then it tells us exactly how to do it. How should we do it? Speak of them while you sit in your home, while you walk on the way. You see, if your Judaism is relegated to when I go to synagogue on Saturday for an hour, that's my Judaism. And it's not a part of me when I'm home. It's not a part of me when I'm traveling. It's not a part of me when I'm at business. It's not a part of me when I'm having fun and on vacation. Then you're sending a different message. The way to teach it thoroughly is not to become the rabbi who becomes well-versed in everything. No, that's for some. But for all of us, the way we can teach it is how we live it, how we behave, by trickle-down effect. That's how this works. The great Kutzke Rebbe, great Hasidic master, said, he guarantees one thing in parenting, that if you push and hound and harass your kids to study and learn, you guarantee that they will push, hound, and harass their kids to study. Ha! Bam! That's like a frying pan right over the top of the head. That's because that's the lesson that's being taught. But if you live it, and you put it into practice. And again, it doesn't mean all or nothing. And it doesn't mean that you're perfect. But it means the fact that all of you take time and say, I want to grow with my understanding of Judaism. I'm not available. You tell your family, comes Wednesday night from 8 to 9, I'm not available. I'm serious. I don't mean it in a joking manner. You've all made that commitment. It's not just a concept. You're putting it into practice. And if somebody calls in the middle, you may or may not answer it. Why? Because this is, and then you call back later and you say, oh, I was sorry, I was in my Torah study class. That speaks volumes more than you'll ever do by saying you need to study Torah. Because you're doing it. That's how it works. Trickle down effect. Okay. One other part. This word, you shall teach them thoroughly. Teach. I would have expected the more common word, the Hebrew word for teach, is the root lamed mem dalid. Lomed. Lomed is to learn or to teach. Talmud, right? The word Talmud, right? Known for the Gemara, right? The Talmud. The root of it is lamed mem dalid, which means teach. Teach and learn. That's not the word that's used here. If you somehow can look at the Hebrew word for teach them thoroughly is vishinantam. You all knew that if you sang it in your heads, right? You get that part. Sher anochi mitzavecha hayom alevavecha vishinantam levanecha. Vishinantam levanecha. You shall teach them thoroughly. That's the unusual word. And the Talmud is really bothered. Like, why use this word? So the Talmud says the following. The word vishinantam, the root of it actually is shinayim. Shane is your tooth. Your tooth. That's a strange word. Because rather what it means is that you shall be sharp. It shall be sharp in your mouth. It shall be sharp, that if someone were to ask you, you don't have to stutter and stumble. And it should be fluent. The same way that you know your address, the same way you know, probably all of you know your social security by heart, the same way you know certain basics about yourself, your life, your children, your birthdays, it's fluent. The words of Torah shall be sharp and fluent in your mouth. You should be familiar to you. And yes, what does that inquire? What does that require? Review. The other word, the other translation of vishinantam comes from the word sheni. Sheni means second time, or the second aliyah is called sheni. Shenis is the second time. It means you have to review. It means you have to review. If you want something to be sharp, you have to review and make it fluent. A one quick gloss over is not going to fly. You have to review again and again. You can't say, been there, done that. I studied that. It's on to the next. You've only seen it once. That's why we record this, so that each of you has the opportunity to review it every single day between now and the next class. No, I'm kidding, right? The concepts, though, are worthy of review, and that's the only way. You need to master the material thoroughly for the sake of your children. Isn't it wonderful? You've had the experience in life where someone asks you a question, and you can answer them on the spot because you know the answer. And I'm not talking just what is 2 + 2, you know, but if you're good in, I don't know, chemistry, you're good at geometry, and it's something that has stuck with you for so long, or you're whatever it is, you're familiar with it, and someone asks you, you're able to repeat it. Like for me, I had the experience just this morning. I've been spending many, many hours over the last probably 6, maybe 7 years already, trying to relearn the stories in the books of the prophets. I felt that I didn't do it justice when I was in school. And I've tried many times to just read through it and the storyline. I don't remember it. It just doesn't stick with me. So I decided about 7 years ago, maybe a little more already, 8 years, that I have a study partner, and twice a week, that's what we study in depth, and we go through it. So I'm learning with somebody this morning, and a piece of Talmud, and the Talmud quotes something from the book of Samuel 2. And I'm like, dude, I know the story here. And I was able to repeat the background to the story and who the players were. And I'm like, yes, it is sinking in. It took 8 years, but it's working. It felt so good. Why? Because you'll forgive me, I schwitzed. I sweated my gventlich off trying to get this information finally and putting it into, okay. Why should any aspect of Torah not be given the same diligence? Isn't it wonderful if somebody says to you, you know, I heard something called, there's a mitzvah of, you know, this year, something called Shemitah, the sabbatical year. What is that? And you're able to say, oh, yes, that's every 7 years. It's in agriculture. And you can answer it. Why are you able to answer it? Because it's sharp. You know it. You've heard it. You reviewed it. It becomes fluent. This is the absolute best way for us to be the role models of influencers to make sure that it gets passed on to the next generation. Make sure that it's sharp in your mouth. Nothing worse as a parent when your child says to you, I have to review chemistry. I have a test coming up. And you go, maybe ask mommy. know, 10th grade was the last time I studied the periodic table. You know, like, what? Chemistry wasn't my favorite, right? But it's a certain, like, I'm a parent. I should know the basics. I should be able. It's not sharp. It's not fluent for me. Thankfully, my wife is much more science-oriented than I am. So I do math. She does science. We're good. Right? Okay. She also does English. She also does history. But I got math. I'm good. My point is very simple. The pasuk here, this verse is telling us the key to it all. Number one, on the basic level, it's our responsibility to teach it to the next generation. Make sure that they know it thoroughly. Number two, how do we teach it? We teach it by being role models. We are the influencers, not the educators. We influence by setting the example, showing how it's done. How do we do it? Review it, learn it, make it a part of you. So that it's sharp and fluent. Constant growth. This is really what it's all about. We have to be able to piece it all together and say, this is, if you have to pick, our primary responsibility. This is it, folks. This is really it. And that, I think, is so, it's so beautiful when you put it in this perspective, that we're saying the words, Shema Yisrael, listen, Hashem, listen, Jewish people. We believe in one God, and we know that this one God has given us a Torah. And it is our responsibility to learn it, incorporate it, review it, make it a part of us, not just because it's the right thing for us, because it is now the opportunity for us to make sure that the guarantors of why we got the Torah in the first place, i.e. the next generation, they are well equipped to be able to continue that tradition. This is what's being said in this one little verse. But this is powerful. Very, very powerful. Okay, we'll stop here. I'll open up to questions. But again, I would like to continue. There's basically two more things in this first paragraph. One is about the mitzvah of tefillin, and then the mitzvah of mezuzah. Those are the last two that we'll hopefully tackle the next couple of weeks. I don't have the calendar in front of me, but at some point I also want to be able to do one class getting us ready for Passover. So I may do tefillin, mezuzah in one, and then Pesach in another. I may split. I have to look at the calendar. But those are the three objectives for us to conquer for the next few weeks. Questions? Yes, Robin.
I think it might be more of a point. I'm not sure if it's a question. Maybe it is. So when you talked about upon your heart, could it be that could be said instead of in your heart, because you never will fully know God. You'll keep striving and striving, that you're never going to have enough knowledge, and maybe until the world to come,
It could be, but this is a command. This is a, I want you to place these words. I'm giving them to you, these words of the Torah. I want you, and what does he want us to do with them?
Right. Well, place them. Right.
It's true. Your point is well taken, and that is, you're right. We will never completely exhaust what it is we will know about God and the unlimitedness of Torah. That's true. But it doesn't, in my mind, it doesn't change the fact that ultimately I want it internalized into my heart. Even though I can only get a percentage, but all that I can learn, I want that inside, not on. That's what begged the question.
Right, but I'm thinking maybe they say on because they want to keep, you want to keep learning, you want to keep doing it. You're never going to get everything internalized, that sort of thing.
Okay. I mean, it could be. It could be. It could be. I certainly won't say no to that. Sharon?
Thank you.
So I'm having trouble with my audio, so you keep kicking in and out. I'm only getting parts. But when you were talking about...
the only words that matter are be and good and Jew.
Well, that's where this is leading. Actually, when you were saying about something being sharp on your teeth and that, you know, being able to
be fluent,
give an answer or, you know, whatever.
Right.
I have to tell you that when you ask a question in class and I can give you back the answer, there's such a good feeling knowing that I'm right. able to pass that back on to you, that I absorbed it of what you taught, and now I can refer it back.
Yeah, it's true.
A fantastic feeling.
It
for
really,
me anyway.
It really is. That's a great point, Sharon. And obviously, I feel honored that you know that I've played a small role in that. But yeah, it's that's really the best way. Because it's become a part of you. And even if it's not when I ask the question, if someone in your class would ask the question, you have it on your fingertips because you've internalized it. You've got it. That's how it should be. We should have that level of sharpness and fluency that if we're asked the question, no hesitation, I got this. You're right. It's a great feeling. It really is.
I just, Reb, if I may, I just happen to think you made reference to the teeth, the sharpness of the teeth. It's like eating in that word, you just grind it up and meditate and ruminate it and just grind it up to small before you really take it down into your very
bitter. Correct. That's exactly how the Talmud uses that expression, that it's supposed to be, you grind it up. That's exactly right. Because you're not supposed to swallow it. It's just, I'll throw it out there. You know, we're supposed to eat matzah on Pesach. We're supposed to eat maror. So the question the Talmud says, what if a person swallows it without chewing? Have they fulfilled the commandment? See, first, okay, why is the Talmud worrying about these things? Because who does that? That's not the point. I know how you think. The point being that is, it's getting down to the essential nature. Is it a technicality that you just have to ingest it, consume it? Or does there need to be experiential? By my grinding it, chewing it up, I get the bitterness out of that maror. In a similar way, I can swallow what the rabbi told me. I can swallow it whole. Fine. I accept it. But it's not really experiential. My goal is never to tell you what to do. My goal is to get the gears in your brain turning. You can agree. You can disagree. I mean, you're welcome to be wrong, but at least what it does is you grind it up. That's my goal. That's the job of a teacher. That's exactly right, Monroe. We're supposed to chew it up, use the sharpness of the teeth to bite. Mind you, it's bite size. You can't swallow the whole thing. Seriously. Again, going back to that concept, you know, hard by the yard, cinch by the inch. That's what it is. Take a bite-sized piece, chew it up, grind it, meditate, think about it, percolate, internalize it. Then you're ready for another bite. That's how
Ingest it.
Yeah, exactly. That's how we do it. Great point. Okay. Held you hostage long enough. Okay. We will, God willing, we'll meet back here next Wednesday night. Have a great rest of the week. I'll speak to you beforehand. Have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos, and we'll see you next week.